All right, let's get started. Good morning. All right. My name is Dan Harmon. I'm a senior program manager on the Windows PowerShell team.
And I'm Mir Rosenberg, also a senior program manager in the PowerShell team. Thank you so much for being here, by the way. 8:30 on a Friday. This is awesome. Thank you.
Absolutely. So this session is Advanced Automation Using Windows PowerShell 3.0. So first of all, how many of you all have used PowerShell 2.0? Awesome.
Nice.
Very nice. And what about PowerShell 3.0? Anybody got a chance to try out 3.0 yet? All right, quite a few.
What about somebody that never used PowerShell before? Oh, good.
The sound guy.
The other guy, awesome. That's good.
I don't think Mal counts. Very good. So this is a 400-level talk. It's targeted to IT pros and scripters. We're not going to be really covering basic PowerShell syntax. Hopefully you know what a commandlet is, right? We're going to be talking about some of the improvements we've made in PowerShell 3.0 and kind of go through how those things help you do some advanced automation. So we want to start off by kind of setting the context and describing our management philosophy with Windows Server. If you look at previous releases of Windows Server, it was a great operating system for a single server and the devices that connected to it. But when you look at Windows Server 2012, this has really advanced beyond that and become a great operating system for many servers, the devices that connect them, whether they're virtual or physical, and whether they live on-premise or off-premise. And this is really about making the transition to the cloud. We talk about Windows Server 2012 being a cloud-optimized OS. And when you think about how you want to be able to manage the cloud, there are a number of key aspects that you need to be aware of. First of all is that everything is remote. You don't have the cloud sitting on a machine under your office that you can log into, right? The cloud sits in some data center remote away, and everything happens remotely. The second thing is the cloud is all about scalability and elastic scale. So being able to manage at scale is very important. And of course, cloud services, those things you run, those are typically running mission-critical services for your business. And so being able to manage in a robust way and be robust and resilient to failures is also very important. And then next, of course, the cloud is composed of hardware, software, services, and things from lots of different vendors. And so it becomes very important that vendors are able to talk to each other using standard mechanisms and standard-based protocols and interfaces. And then, of course, there's this notion of agility. I think about agility as being able to map the business needs to the IT processes and services that satisfy those needs. And of course, business needs are constantly evolving and changing. And so the more able the IT is able to quickly change and adapt to the business needs, the more agile IT is and the more value it provides to the business, makes the business more and more successful. And of course, the thing that links all these together is automation. And the tool they use to automate is, of course, PowerShell. You look up in the dictionary, automation, that's PowerShell right there, see PowerShell. All right, so we've kind of set the context for why we think PowerShell is important. And when you look at the investments we've made in PowerShell 3.0, it really breaks down across six themes that we've identified. And we'll be going through each one of these in a little bit more detail. So if the last slide was a 10,000-foot view. This slide is more of like a 10-foot view. We just have a massive amount of investment in PowerShell 3.0, a ton of features. This isn't all the features. This is just what would fit on this slide. And, of course, we know you love demos, so we've got lots and lots of demos in this session. In fact, we might not be able to get to all the content in the slides. We'll probably go kind of quickly through the slides. But the slides, of course, will be available on the TechEd website so that if we went through something kind of quick and you wanted to go back and review, you're welcome to download the slide deck and do that. we're going to focus most of our time on the demos. All right, so let's get started. Let's first talk about the first theme, which is simple and easy. This kind of breaks down across two areas. The first area is simple and easy for new users. So you might be thinking, well, this is an advanced automation talk. Why do I care about new users, right? Well, you guys are the PowerShell experts. And in your organization, you probably have some folks who are not experts yet, who are still new to PowerShell. And you might be the people who are kind of helping these new users come along and learn PowerShell. So as they say, oh, you know, how do I learn PowerShell? I need to figure out PowerShell. You can point them to some of these new features, and those will help you to get these folks up to speed. Of course, the first thing is Windows PowerShell ISE. Continue to invest in this tool with things like IntelliSense and Snippets. We have Command Discovery now, which makes it really easy to find all the commandlets that are installed on the system. We have the help system. We made big improvements there with the updatable help, so that now you can get the latest content dynamically downloaded and installed. And of course, we made some improvements and streamlined the syntax and the language to ease the on-ramp for new users. Of course, we have also invested for our existing user base, all of you. The key things we like to highlight here, the extensible type system. We've done a lot of work around hash tables. We'll be showing you some demos there. And types and formats, you can now dynamically create types and formats at runtime. I don't know how many of you have authored or tried to author a type file or a format file. Pretty challenging. We made that a lot easier. And then commandlets, of course, we have a lot of commandlets in Server 2012, but in Core PowerShell, we've added a lot of new commandlets and made improvements to existing commandlets. And then even in the ISE for advanced users, we have things like XML syntax highlighting, and we've combined the command and output pane into a single pane. So there's lots of stuff even for existing users. All right, so let's get right to the demos. Switch over here.
So we will start with array member enumeration, and we'll see how we made it much easier in PowerShell V3 to deal with singletons and arrays. So hopefully you won't have to think about this as much anymore. So going back to our original, you know, sacred vow, the investment you made in PowerShell, you know, hopefully you can carry that over and over and keep leveraging what you learned. And also this think, type, get philosophy that Jeffrey Snower instilled for PowerShell of, like, I think what I want to do, I type it, and I get it. So let's start with array member enumeration here. And in this case, we want to compare how things were in V2 versus V3. So it's really clear what changed and how things are better now. So if I'm running this console on PowerShell V2. So if we take a single process, say the idle process, and we store it in our $p variable, then $p will have a single element, right? And I can do things like accessing the name property directly. So I see idle there. But if I now assign several processes to $p, like all the processes that end with SS, now $p is an array of processes instead. And we can see here that if we do $p.name in V2, nothing would be returned because there is no name property in the array back in V2. But if I now assign again a single process to $p, this still works. But if I want to index into $p, say I don't know that just has a single process there, I get an error. So if I treat this as an array and the array happens to have one element, this didn't work in V2. So we have to ensure that we can handle arrays and singletons in a separate way. Now, if I go to my V3 console, let's do the same. So if I assign a single process to it and I access the name property, that still works. So we have backwards compatibility. We assign several processes, that still works. Now, if I do $p.name, we are now unrolling the collection for you. You don't have to think about that anymore. That returns what you would expect. And it seems so obvious now, right? But this didn't work back then, or this didn't work, you know, in the previous version of the OS. And even better, if I now assign a single process again to $P, the idle process, that works. And now this works. So I can do $P indexing into the first element and accessing the name variable even when it has a single element. So that didn't work in V2, and now that works, and I can even access, you know, I can even dynamically add properties like length, and that will work. So that's just one example of how we're making things simple and easy now in V3.
Exactly. Thanks, Mir. So another thing I want to show you. Let's see. All right. So I mentioned we've done a lot of investment in hash tables. So if you're familiar with hash tables, you'll really like these features. If you're not familiar with hash tables, get to know them because they're really handy data structure. So PowerShell hash tables, just a quick review. They have key value pairs here. And it's a really nice, handy, lightweight data structure. You can create ad hoc objects really easily. If you look at the type of a hash table, notice that the underlying type in .NET is a system.collections.hashTable. And that's great, but it has a number of characteristics. First of all, it's organized, the elements in the hash table are organized by hash code. They're not actually organized by insertion order. So if you're not familiar with this, it can kind of surprise you when you do something that expects the order to be preserved. So for example, here I'm creating hash table 123, but I actually get back 132. So what we've done, this tripped up a lot of people, and people asked, well, hey, how do I create an ordered hash table? We now have this ordered attribute that you can just add to the hash literal, and it will create an ordered hash table. And if you look at the type of that, it's actually underneath, it's a .NET ordered dictionary, which provides a lot of the same benefits of hash tables, but it's ordered, preserves the insertion order. Another thing we've done is we've made it really easy to create objects from hash tables. So any object that has a null constructor and is just essentially just a property bag, we take the keys on the hash table and map those to the property names and just assign the values from the hash table to the properties. So a good example of this is PS session option. This has a null constructor, and we have a commandlet where you can go and create a new PS session option. You can pass like the output buffering mode, no machine profile, but then it becomes a two-step process because you need to create the object and then you got to pass it to new session. Now in the new way, you can just pass the hash table directly to the session option parameter on new session, and we will at runtime just create that object under the covers and pass it straight to new PS session. So you'll find yourself using this a lot once you become familiar with it. You will wonder how you ever lived without it. All right, so those are just a couple of examples of some of the language improvements we've made. So let's switch back to the slides. Okay. All right, the next thing we want to talk about is simple and easy delegated administration. And this breaks down across three investment areas. The first is what we call session configuration files, PSSC files. And this is just a declarative way to define a PowerShell remote endpoint. The second thing is run as. So now you can allow the endpoint to run with a different set of credentials than the user that's connecting. And then the third thing is shared host. This allows everybody who's connecting into that endpoint, all of those to run in the same process, which helps with scalability and performance. So with that, let's jump into a demo. All right, so let's review really quick. In V2, we have this notion of session configurations. This is the way that you expose a new PowerShell remoting endpoint. You can do get PS session configuration. The default endpoint is Microsoft.PowerShell. So if you just do new session, that's the one you're going to connect to by default. You can look at the configuration name here. Okay, so suppose we have this limited user. It's a standard domain user. Nothing special here. It's not an admin, not a domain admin. And we want to do some delegated administration for this limited user. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to collect the credentials. Okay, now by default, only admins are going to be able to connect to the Microsoft.PowerShell endpoint. So if we try to create a new session using these credentials of the limited user, that's going to fail with access denied. So we can use our register PS session configuration commandlet, and we can register a new endpoint. Let's call it limited endpoint. We're going to show the security descriptor UI so that we can give that limited user permissions. So we go ahead and we add limited user. We need to give him execute permissions. Okay, so we've created the endpoint. Now at least it's possible for the limited user to at least connect to the machine. So we say new PS session, we specify the configuration that we want to connect to, limited endpoint, we specify the credentials, and now we have a session. Okay, but we have a little bit of a problem. If we look at the commandlets that got exposed to that endpoint, it actually exposes all of the commandlets that are available on that server.
So how good is that endpoint if I can still see, you know, all of the commandlets?
Yeah, so that's not very good. Not only that, but then when that user tries to run some of those things, the user might not have the underlying permissions. So for example, tries to run get service, this operation might require other privileges. The user doesn't have privileges to run that commandlet. So that didn't work very well. So let's go ahead and unregister that endpoint. All right. So what do we do now? Well, in V2, we had this notion of a startup script, which is a parameter on register PS session configuration. You could specify a startup script, and in that startup script, you could go and you could write some really chewy code that would import a bunch of modules that you wanted, and then you had to iterate through all the commandlets and set the visibility to private for ones that you wanted to hide, and then you had to make sure that the execution policy was set the way you wanted, and oh, don't forget if you have environment variables you need to define and providers and all of these things. Yeah, you could. It was possible. You could do it. Not super fun. In fact, one of our MVPs, Alexander, has like a 75-minute session that he's been presenting at various conferences that walks you through this whole process of using startup script to define a restricted endpoint. So we wanted to make this a lot easier in V3, and this is where the notion of session configuration files comes from. It's a PSSC file. It's basically just a PowerShell data file. Again, just a file with a hash table in it. It has a set of key-value pairs that allow you to declaratively go and say exactly what the endpoint is going to expose. We made this really easy to create. We have a new PS session configuration file commandlet. We specify the path where you want to save the file, modules to import which modules you want. You can even say which commandlets you want to be visible. And then we pass this session type. We say restricted remote server. This allows us to get the absolute minimal working remote endpoint. There's like 7 commandlets that you need to have a basic endpoint working. Let's go and create that file. And let's open the ISC, take a look at what that file looks like. Again, this is just a PowerShell data file. You can define things like, well, you got the schema version, the GUID to uniquely identify it. But you can define things like the execution policy, the language mode, the session type. You can define environment variables. You can attach metadata like author, company, copyright, description. You can specify which modules to import. And then you can say which of the various command types should be visible. You can even define functions and variables. You can specify types and formats to process in there, as well as scripts. So very rich functionality here to be able to set up the endpoint exactly the way you want. In a very easy way, you can just inspect it, see what's going on in the endpoint, and easy to author and update these things. So now, let's go ahead and use that file. We'll call the register PS session configuration commandlet. Give it the limited endpoint name. We're going to do the same thing, except this time we're going to say the path parameter here. We're going to pass our file in. Add our user. Execute. All right, let's go ahead and create a session again. Configuration name, limited endpoint, pass the credentials. Now let's see how many commands we've got. Great. So now you can see we've got the 7 required commandlets plus the one that we wanted to expose, get service. All right, so let's go ahead and try run and get service. Okay, that didn't work. So what's happening here? Well, again, just because the commandlet is visible doesn't mean that the user has permissions to run it, right? So how do we solve that problem? How can we delegate permissions to the limited user without making that user an admin? This is where we get to the feature run as, which is new in V3. This allows the endpoint itself to run with a different set of credentials than the user who is connecting to the endpoint. This is really easy to set up. You can do it at registration time with register PS session configuration commandlet, or you can do it directly through the WS man drive. Or we've already have this endpoint set up, so we'll just use set PS session configuration, and we'll say run as credential, and we'll pass the credential. And we're going to have it run with administrator credentials. And we get this warning back. This is very important because any users who are connecting, who are allowed to connect to the endpoint, are going to be running with those credentials. So you need to make sure that you expose the right set of things and that you only allow those users who should have access to that endpoint. All right, let's try that again. Create a new session. And let's try to run get service. And now that user can run get service and get the results back. So it's that simple to do delegated admin in V3. All right, so let's switch back to the slides. And okay. I'll turn it over to Mir.
So one of the things we want to talk about is comprehensive coverage. If you attended Jeffrey Snower's keynote session, you might know the answer to some questions we'll ask. So stay tuned because we have a few stickers for you at the end as an incentive. One of the things we did in this release is taking management very, very seriously. So we have the management CEC, and just in case you haven't heard this before, CEC stands for Common Engineering Criteria, and this is basically a set of requirements for all Microsoft server products that we need to comply with, engineering requirements, before we ship. So in this particular case, in the management case, the idea is that we want to reduce your overall cost of ownership when it comes to management. But we do it, as you can see here, for other things as well, like security, reliability, et cetera. And when we ship, we want to have a great management story. So that's why all of these server products need to, you know, comply with these CECs, and in this particular case, the management CEC. The particular requirement in this case is that any management surface that you expose has to be built on top of PowerShell automation, so either commandlets or providers. For instance, Server Manager, if you've been to one of our sessions as well, you have seen Server Manager is our new beautiful UI for management. That is built on top of PowerShell automation, so commandlets or providers. So with that, what we end up having is a great coverage. In this release, if we do a comparison, I have a little quiz for you. So if we say that in the last server release, we shipped with 12 modules in PowerShell, how many modules do you think we have shipped in Windows Server 2012 release preview? What do you say? A, B, C, D? And here, D.
B.
I hear one I C, B. One B. Okay, so C is the winner, so if you thought it was C at the end, we have some stickers for you, PowerShell stickers, of course. And now, commandlets, you know, because it's very easy to say we improved coverage and this is so much better now. We wanted to get, you know, real data for you. So if we shipped in the last release with 587 commandlets, as we did, how many do you think we have shipped in the release preview? Good.
You guys have been listening to them.
Awesome. You'll be attending our keynotes and sessions. That's good. Awesome. That's the right answer. So I guess we don't have stickers for everybody, so you'll have to run here at the end if you want the sticker. But yeah, with that, let me show you a demo. You know, we want to show you exactly how this looks in this release. So if you look at the number of modules, we have the 85 there. This is a machine running in our Redmond offices. And also you can get the list of commands. You see it's actually 23, 21. This is basically a machine that has every single role and feature of this release installed.
And this is running the RC build of Server 2012.
Yeah, as you can see at the top, 8400, that was our release preview build. Okay, so we go back to the slides real quick. And now we can talk about the new commandlets, just the PowerShell commandlets.
Right, so as I mentioned, so we have lots of new commandlets in Server 2012, but we also have new commandlets in core PowerShell itself. This is a slide that talks about all the new commandlets. We're going to demo quite a few. Actually, we're not going to get to demo any of the stuff in the other category, but there's some really cool stuff there. So if you get a chance, go check out Unblock File, New WinEvent. There's some really cool stuff there. And the other thing is that PowerShell is available even everywhere, even more than previous releases. So obviously, we're in Windows 8. We're in Windows Server 2012. We're even in a more limited sense and more constrained sense. We're available on Windows RT. PowerShell remoting is on by default on all server SKUs, which is really great because now it's much easier to do remoting. Of course, we're in Server Core now, on by default in Server Core, and available even without the graphical tools and graphical shell. And for the first time ever, we are available in Windows PE. So if you use Windows PE, you have a dependency on that. We're now, both .NET and PowerShell 3 are available in PE, which is really great. And of course, we have the management framework 3.0, which is available for down level, and PowerShell Web Access, which we'll be demoing later. All right, now let's go ahead and talk about our next theme, robust and scalable. Turn it over to Mir.
Okay, so this is my favorite feature in PowerShell V3. Not that I work on it, but so PowerShell Workflow. PowerShell Workflow is a multi-machine orchestration engine that we built on top of Windows Workflow Foundation 4.0 and .NET 4.0. So if you're familiar with those, the whole goal here was let's stop creating partial solutions that merge PowerShell with Windows Workflow Foundation in a proprietary way. Let's just make, you know, a good integration that makes sense end to end. And I think we are, you know, best suited for doing this because, you know, we know both of these technologies really well. So we worked really closely with the Windows Workflow Foundation team, which was a great partner, to make this a great end-to-end story for you. Now, you're like, why do I care about workflows? It's fairly simple. It's the best way to reliably execute long-running tasks, either management tasks, IT processes, across a heterogeneous set of multiple machines. And we did this, it's not just, you know, words, it's not just marketing words. We did this with concrete investments. So we made PowerShell Workflow robust by allowing you to do things like suspend workflows, resume workflows. So you can now survive any kind of, pretty much any kind of machine interruptions, be it reboots, network interruptions, etc. We made it scalable, so a key new addition is that now you can execute tasks in PowerShell in parallel. And reliable, because now you can do action retry, connection retry. I was thinking of the Eurocup, you know, like maybe Portugal or Germany would have liked to do some action retry this week and try those shoots again. But yeah, now you can do this via PowerShell. And performance, you know, just like Dan was saying with shared host, as you explained before, for delegated admin. And last but not least, we strive to make it really familiar for you. Again, going back to that sacred vow, if you invested your time in learning PowerShell, we leverage that knowledge over and over. So not only you can write XAML workflows now, as you can do with Workflow Foundation, but you can write workflows using PowerShell script. So you're familiar with PowerShell script, you can now write workflows as well using that script. So real quick demo setup, we are starting from our admin client where you do your work, and we're connecting to a management server that is the one that runs PowerShell workflow. It accepts these incoming connections from the clients, and those workflows get executed against these multiple managed nodes. And in this case, just for the sake of the demo, they are the same, the admin client and the management server. So let's go to the demo. Here you see, again, all of the commandlets. You know, there are so many that our MVPs at the PowerShell magazine couldn't fit all of them in one wallpaper. So that's another graphical view for you. So one thing I want to start with is very simple workflow. If we are in ISC, you can see now we have a new keyword, the workflow keyword. And you can name workflows just like every other PowerShell command, verb dash noun. In this case, very simple workflow. We can output the string. I just like ice cream a lot. And you can find out about those workflows, get information just, again, like every other PowerShell command. So we strive to make this very integrated, very easy for you. Same for getting the syntax. So you can see now here we have a set of workflow common parameters. Let's look at them in more detail. We have 30 workflow parameters that are just built in for you, ready to use. You don't have to code them or think about, you know, I want to execute this remotely, so most likely I will need a computer name, a credential, maybe a port, etc. So we try to make this really easy for you, built in for most of the things you might want to try. So here is the connection retry. You can specify the count, interval, same for action. You can run workflows as jobs. So if, again, you know PowerShell jobs, you can do it for workflows too. And you can even assign it a friendly job name. So,
yeah, in fact, that's something to reiterate. So like hash tables, we've continued to invest in hash tables. If you're not using jobs right now, go check out jobs, get familiar with jobs, because we're building lots and lots of cool stuff on PowerShell jobs. And this is just one example.
Yeah. And let's get a little bit more serious now. So we'll get to a real, real workflow later. But this is just a long-running workflow. We were saying workflows are built specifically for, or ideally for long-running tasks. So I have one long-running workflow here. Just will get the date and sleep and iterate forever. So I can assign this workflow run as a job to a variable. And now I can see, as we said, it's a job. It's running. So you get the same output as get job. You can use the job commandlet. You can receive job, you know, just like you do for every other PowerShell job. And now, a new state, you can suspend jobs. So this is a new commandlet. We have two new commandlets for jobs in this release, suspend job and resume job in the workflow environment. So now you get your workflow suspended. What this does is basically it checkpoints all of the workflow state and metadata for you. So you can then, you know, perform actions, resume it, etc. We'll see it with the next example as well. So, you know, you can, again, receive the data. You can resume it. And now the workflow is running again. So let me clean this up and go to a more serious, even, workflow demo. So here we are in the management server that is running my PowerShell workflow. And the idea is that we want to do... let me show you the workflow first. We want to create some VMs, this install VM workflow. We want to create some VMs, and we want to do it in parallel. So here's the new parallel construct we were talking about, for each dash parallel. So, you know, I can do this in parallel. I don't need to create each VM and then wait, create the next one. So that's a great way to parallelize. It will save me time. It will get the best out of my environment. I can create, you know, the VM name, the path, etc. And then I don't want to have to do this again in case something goes wrong. I want to checkpoint this, persist all the information to disk. One important thing to note here is you can persist by default to a file, flat file store, or if you have SQL, you can reroute this so it's persisted to a SQL, full SQL database. And then we can start those VMs in parallel, again, collect their IP addresses. So you'll have this workflow. We'll publish it. You'll have it at the TechEd website, and we'll also publish it to the PowerShell blog if you want to go through that in more detail. And the idea is at the end.
In my script.
Oh, yeah, one more thing. Thank you. We have a new, basically every step in a workflow, we call that activity. Just like Workflow Foundation. So one of the key activities we are shipping with, besides virtually every single PowerShell commandlet that is available for you as a workflow activity, we have this inline script activity. What this does is it increases the reliability and robustness of your workflow environment because it allows you to run this activity out of process. So if this crashes or something goes wrong, no problem. That goes down, and you continue with your workflow execution.
One other cool thing that that you see here is this dollar using. See how she's using dollar using? What that basically does is it allows you to take a variable that you've defined elsewhere in your workflow, and it brings it in line into that inline script and allows you to use it. Before the dollar using syntax, it was really convoluted to be able to do this. You had to define a parameter, and then you had to pass the value as a parameter argument, and the syntax was just hideous, and people got really confused about how do I pass a value into my script block there. So now dollar using is really cool. It's very intuitive. You just say dollar using, grabs the thing that you've already defined, and just brings it in line.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. And one more thing on inline script, you can give it a friendly display name so that you'll see when we run the workflow, instead of seeing inline script, you're like, I don't know, I may have 15 inline scripts. So you can give it a friendly name. In this case, you will see get VMIP address. So that's much more convenient and clear. And a couple more things. I can send this mail message. So one of the things you can do here is notify an administrator, hey, you know, this happened. Go take care of this and come back. This may or may not work, depending how the internet is doing today. It's been pretty sensitive this week, so we'll see. And then eventually, you want to say, in this case, send mail, suspend the workflow, so the administrator can take care of, you know, whatever he needs to do there, and then, you know, continue with the workflow execution. In this case, once we continue, we are going to join those machines, those VMs that we created to the domain, another, you know, long-running task. And eventually, at the end, we'll send another mail to the admin saying, hey, you know, everything is done. Your VMs are created. They have joined the domain. So that's the workflow. Let's go run it now. Yeah, basically, we are on our management server. And then you'll see here in my Hyper-V, so you know we are not cheating. I just have our DC and our management server. Nothing else is there. This is where the VMs will get created. So if we go back to the dual pane view for ISC.
F1.
Sorry, I just ran F1. That's why you're seeing that. Let me. OK, let me see CLS real quick. OK, so in this case, we'll collect the domain credentials first, just like we said. Need to make sure we type that correctly. Then the local credentials for the machine. And finally, the mail credentials. So we can send that email that you saw there.
Hopefully the internet is complying this morning.
If not, you know what the workflow is doing now. So let's try our best here and pray to the internet. Okay, so in this case, let me show you while this is working. We are, you know, invoking this command remotely against our workflow session, and there we are importing, you know, our install VM PSM1, which is what we just walked through.
So what's that? What's that new PS workflow session? What's that about?
Oh, that's great. Thank you. So you know how you have new PS session to create a new session, you know, using the PowerShell remoting endpoint. Now, to get all these capabilities we talked about, you know, workflow throttling, connection pooling, shared hosts, all that, we have an endpoint, a workflow endpoint out of the box that is customized for running workflows. So when you do a new PS workflow session, you are creating a new session using, you know, getting all those capabilities already, all ready for you to use.
Cool.
So now, new PS workflow session, we imported the module, and now we are going to actually run the module. So the way we do that, run the workflow. Let me start it, and then we can explain what's going on here. So the way we do this is we're invoking command again, install VM, which is our workflow name, and we're passing it a PS computer name. You see this PS prefix for workflows now? So you know this is a workflow common parameter that we have there. We are passing it the computer name, or you can pass an AP. Just like with regular remoting, we are passing our workflow parameters, the VHD path where the VMs will get created, the main credentials, all the credentials that we cache there, dollar using, you see that there again, so you can use it everywhere. And here we are already getting the IP address. So if we go back to the machine where we are creating these demo VMs. So you can see they are there now. They weren't there before. They are there now.
Very cool.
So it's a real live demo. And eventually, we'll get this email. So let's go back and see where this is at now. Let's let it run a little bit more,
sure.
And we'll come back to this later.
Sounds great. Okay. Sounds great. So that's workflow. See if we can switch back to the slides.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about the next investment we've made in the robust area, scheduled jobs. As I mentioned, we've made a lot of investments in jobs. So get to know jobs. They're your friend. They work really great. Scheduled jobs, we've added the ability. We've basically taken PowerShell jobs and we've integrated them tightly with Task Scheduler. So if you're familiar with Task Scheduler, which you all probably are, you'll see a lot of familiarities there. Basically allows you to take just a regular PowerShell background job and schedule it. And we support a rich set of triggers, basically all the stuff that Task Scheduler gives you. You can schedule on a daily, weekly, custom interval with a specific repetition or duration in response to an event. You can run with different credentials. And we have a new PS Schedule Job module, which has a whole set of commands that allow you to manage these scheduled jobs. So let me show you a demo of this. Comes up, okay. So first of all, let me just show you the commandlets. They're in the PS Schedule Job module. See, we've got job trigger, we've got scheduled job option. Let's take a look at the new job trigger command. You can see we've got the ability to schedule once at a specific date time with a random delay with a specific repetition interval and duration. Daily, weekly, at logon, at startup. So a lot of really rich functionality there. So let's go ahead and try to create a one-time trigger, new job trigger, once at an hour from now. We can create a weekly trigger, very intuitive with the weekly parameter, the day of the week that you want. A daily trigger at 3 a.m. And then we can pass those triggers to the register schedule job commandlet. So let's go ahead and create a daily backup with our daily trigger. And we can, in this case, we're going to pass a script block, and this script block will run when the job runs. So we're just going to do a backup of our important files. And we can do another scheduled job, generate a weekly report with our weekly trigger. In this case, we're going to pass a file path to a script that gets run when the job runs. Now we can see a list of scheduled jobs using getScheduledJob. You can see I've got three here. And we can pipe that to get job trigger and find out exactly when the job will run. That returns our job triggers. And then we have a set of advanced options using the scheduled job option commandlets. So here we can look at the job options on our daily backup. We have a really nice set of defaults, but also a lot of rich functionality that kind of mirrors what you might see in Task Scheduler. And we can customize those things by piping to set scheduled job. In this case, let's suppose that we only want one backup to run at a time, so we set the multiple instance policy to queue. And we need network connectivity, so we specify the required network switch there. And you can see we've set the job option on that job. The other thing that's nice with scheduled jobs is that the results are actually persisted to disk. And that makes them available across sessions. Now, this is per user, so you don't have users interfering with each other's jobs. But let's suppose that we run this in a new PowerShell window. So I can say get scheduled job. See my scheduled jobs. I can do a get job here. You can see the list of jobs that I've got. I've got some that are completed, some that are failed. Let's do a receive job on that number 2 ID here, and we'll keep the results. Okay, that looks like it succeeded. This is my build code job. And then I also want to show you some new properties we added. So let's go with begin time and PS end time. So each of the scheduled jobs now has these two properties, PS begin time and PS end time, that show us when our job started and ended. And we can drill into the one that failed. which was number 6 up here. You can see. And we can actually get back errors and all the whatever the output is from that job. And then if you are done with the job and you want to get rid of it, you can use unregister scheduled job to clean that up. So a lot of rich functionality now with scheduled jobs.
By the way, one thing I want to mention here, if we go back to the other PowerShell window, if you haven't seen this before, you know, this yellow and white UI, we are using what's called Start Demo. You can download this in one of the PowerShell blog posts we did a while ago. If you go to the PowerShell blog and search for Start Demo, this is all actually running. This is a, like live demo. We are just automating the typing of the commands. So this is really useful if you are doing demos or even if you are training somebody or if you are learning PowerShell. It's still, you know, running as if you were just typing them.
Yeah, in fact, if you get any of the demos from the session and you want to teach somebody else how to do it, yep. Really great way just to start demo and walk them through the same demo. It's fantastic. All right, let's switch back to the slides. All right, the other area where we invested is in the robustness of PowerShell remoting. We have two features, disconnected sessions and robust session connectivity. So what happens if you're familiar with what happens in V2 when you're doing PowerShell remoting? If there's any kind of a network glitch or anything like that, you lose connectivity, your session is just busted. You have about half a second, which is like the TCP/IP timeout interval, and if the glitch lasts longer than that, then the session goes into a broken state. Whatever you're running there, it's just gone, non-recoverable. So we wanted to really improve that in V3 and add a lot more robustness. And this is both at the WSMAN protocol layer and within PowerShell remoting itself. So now remote sessions will actually stay in a connected state during transient network glitches or network interruptions and failures for up to 4 minutes. And then after 4 minutes, if you still haven't restored network connectivity, the remote session will automatically, on both the client and server side, transition to a new disconnected state. And then if it's disconnected, the command can actually, and the job can continue to run on the server even while the session is disconnected. And the output will just continue to fill up in the WSMAN buffers. And if the WSMAN buffers get full, command will be paused so you don't lose anything. It's actually configurable, so you can say, hey, I want to drop the output and just let it continue to run if you don't care about the output. So a lot of richness there. And then once you've reestablished network connectivity, the client can go back and reconnect to that disconnected session and then retrieve the output again. And we have a whole set of new commandlets around managing disconnected sessions. So with that, let me show you a little demo. Okay, let me get rid of this. Get rid of this. All right, let me show you disconnected sessions first. So I've got a scenario here. Suppose I'm running a long-running command on a remote server as a background job, and I want to disconnect from the server while the command continues to run and then reconnect to it later. So I create the remote session. Notice the state is opened here. Now here I'm going to start a long-running command on that session, invoke command on that session. This is just going to output some stuff as a job. Notice that the job is running right now. Let it run for a little while. Now we can use the new disconnect PS session commandlet and explicitly disconnect that session. Notice that state is now disconnected. And likewise, the job underneath is also in a disconnected state. Now later, I can reconnect to the job on the server. I can use either connect PS session, or I can use receive PS session, which will both do a connection and receive the output. So here I'm going to do receive PS session, get the job back. Notice that it's completed. And I can receive the output. So let's go ahead and clean that up and show you another scenario. So this time, similar to scenario one, except this time we want to direct the output to the host. So let me show you how this works. Let's create a new session. It's opened. We're going to invoke our long-running command as a job again. job is running. Let's run for a minute. We're going to disconnect it explicitly again. Notice the state here is disconnected.
That's another new state for you three, just like suspended.
For both sessions and jobs. We look at the job is disconnected. And now we can call our receive PS session, but this time we're going to say out target host, so we can get the output back to the host. And if that was running, you would see there's the output interactively coming back to the host. And then if you happen to have some output stored in the job before you disconnected, that output will be stored there. We don't have any. We can go ahead and clean up. All right, so let's take a look at another scenario. Let's kind of do the same thing. Start a long-running command on the remote server, disconnect. But this time, see, we've been reconnecting from the same client every time. We can actually support reconnecting from a totally new client. For example, if the original client crashed or went away or was on a totally different computer, we can reconnect from a brand new client, and we'll do client reconstruction and be able to get the data back. So let's start our long-running command. And notice this new parameter here, in disconnected session. What this says is that, hey, go and create the session on the remote server, but immediately put it into a disconnected state so that no output is returned to the client. That allows you to later go get all of the output from a different client, which is exactly what we're going to do. So let's go ahead and create a new client, new PowerShell window. And what we can do is we use the new PS session commandlet here to query the remote server for the list of disconnected sessions. We've only got one here. Notice that it's disconnected because we said in disconnected session. And we can say receive PS session, and we can retrieve the output back to this new client. And let's clean that up. All right. So now let's talk about robust session connectivity. So suppose you're doing something like a critical data migration across PowerShell remoting. This needs to be very robust. You don't want any failures here. So suppose we're migrating our data. I've got this little utility here that's going to simulate a network disruption. So let's go ahead and disrupt the network. Notice that immediately we detect that the network has been disrupted, and we're going to try and actually reconnect to that session. We're not going to go into a busted state immediately like we did in V2. Now suppose the network comes back, the network is restored. So what's happening here is under the covers, WSMAN is detecting that the network has been restored, and it attempts to reconnect both the session and the commands that were running in the session. And then once that connection has been reestablished, it returns the output back to the client. And notice here, I was migrating data 6 when the connection was interrupted, picked up right where I left off, migrating data 7. No data was lost. Very robust.
You should give this tool to the networking guys here so they can fix the wireless access.
Yeah. All right, so let's clean it up. So that's robust session connectivity and disconnected sessions. Let's go back to the slides.
Sorry about this.
All right, turn it over to Mir to talk about rich platform.
Yes. So first new thing, Windows PowerShell Web Access. Basically, now you can use PowerShell virtually from anywhere. So if you're in a coffee shop with Wi-Fi and you have PowerShell abstinence, you can log on to your IE and you will get PowerShell now. The idea is that we're increasing, you know, the value of the investment you made in learning PowerShell, and you can use this tool. You know, it's kind of like Outlook Web Access, but for PowerShell, if you think about it. You can write commandlets with it. You can get, you know, just run your regular commandlets as well. And this way, you just get web-based management for free in a way, right? Because you can use PowerShell from anywhere to manage your IT environment. And you can use this, you know, from a tablet, from your mobile device, as long as, you know, it's one of our supported browsers. You have the list here. This is the list for now. You know, we are continuing to test. And basically, if your browser supports JavaScript, cookies, HTTP, HTTPS, then, you know, you should be able to use PowerShell Web Access from there. So in this case, just to do a quick walkthrough of the architecture, you're in your client at the beach. You're like, oh, my God, you know, I get an alert. One of my servers is down. As long as I have internet access, I can connect to my gateway, which is running PowerShell web access, Windows PowerShell web access. And that way I can get access to my, you know, corporate machines and troubleshoot, say, what's going on. So let's see a demo of that. Let me minimize the VM. So this is the portal. In this case, this is my physical host. I'm connecting to my one of my VMs here, the DC VM that you're seeing here. Just to simulate it. So I'm going to log on as the administrator in this case. Yeah. Type my password. So this is secure. It requires a certificate, by the way. So in this case, we already configured the trusted root certificates. I'm connecting to my DC. And you even have, you know, additional options you can set. You can leverage here your delegated or junior admin endpoint, etc. SSL, port number, many things you can configure here. So if I sign in, boom, now I have PowerShell in a web browser. I know this font is kind of small from the back, but basically this is the PowerShell window with the regular prompt you get, and now I can run things like get process. Oh, sorry, I mistyped it, so you can see another feature here. You get an error, just like in PowerShell. If I type get process correctly, I get the list of processes. I even get history here. I get tab completion even. So everything is there.
And this works pretty much in any browser that supports, you know, JavaScript and HTML. We tested on a handful of the most common browsers. So great way to access PowerShell from a browser.
Yeah, and when I'm done, just like OWA, Outlook Web Access, I sign out, and you're done. So very handy tool. So if we go back real quick. Another investment we made in making PowerShell an even richer platform is in ISC. One thing I really like is that by creating new features, you know, say like, or enhancing existing feature like the tab completion API here, we can surface, you know, an even richer platform by building features on top of that like IntelliSense. So now in ISC, as you can see here, you have IntelliSense. You'll see that when we run some demos as well. Show command pane is another great new feature if you attended Jeffrey's session on PowerShell for Beginners, or you can watch it on a video. You can see a demo of that as well. So these are just some examples of how we enrich the platform even more in V3. And that rich platform will enable you to, you know, build even better scripts and share them with the community. These are just some examples. We also have, you know, PowerShell Magazine, a great website for PowerShell resources. These are just some examples, Script Explorer or the scripting guides, you know, to share your scripts with the community and learn from others as well. So that's one of the things I love from PowerShell the most, is the awesome community. People are really willing to share, learn from others, and share, you know, their knowledge as well.
Yeah, and that's just going to continue to increase with V3 and Server 2012 and the investments we've made. Absolutely.
So let's get to standards now.
All right. Let me talk about standards. So as I mentioned, this is super important when you talk about cloud computing. Lots of different vendors need to be able to integrate their stuff. The way they do that is with standards. We talk about standards-based management. It really breaks down across the interfaces and the protocols that we use for management. And we're building on a couple of DMTF standards. The first is the interface is the Common Information Model, SIM. In WMIV2, this gives us access to SIM over WSMAN. And then the protocol that we use, Web Services for Management, WS Management, or WSMAN for short. The Microsoft implementation is Windows Remote Management, or WinRM. And this gives us access to the WSMAN protocol. And WSMAN is how we do PowerShell remoting. So that's how we do the standards-based management. And if you want to learn more about how we've improved our standard support and our interoperability with Server 2012, there was a session on Wednesday. It was a really great session. If you didn't get to see it, go check out go download the PowerPoint and check out the stream video for that. The other area that we want to call out is a new feature in Server 2012 called Management OData IIS Extension. And this takes advantage of the Open Data Protocol, OData. What OData is it's a RESTful web-based protocol that's built on HTTP and JSON, allows you to query and retrieve data through web services, through REST APIs. And essentially what this is really cool, what this allows you to do is set up an OData endpoint on a server, and then incoming OData requests through the management OData IS extension, it will map those OData requests to PowerShell commandlets and invoke those PowerShell commandlets and then return the data. So what this means is basically anything that can talk web services can now invoke PowerShell and get the results back. So that's not just Windows, but you know, non-Windows, PHP, Perl, Python, Ruby, .NET, anything that can talk web services can now get access to PowerShell. It's just super cool. There's a schema designer tool that allows you to kind of help set this up that's posted on the Download Center. I think we posted an update this week or last week, yep. Very recently. So if you're interested in that, go check it out. And I believe we have a demo for this.
Yes, we do. So demo architecture, similar to the workflow one, we're actually going to use the same infrastructure. So your admin client where you do your work, connecting to the management server, and eventually managing your managed nodes, except for the fact that now we are connecting to this OData IIS extension, or management OData IIS extension instead. So let's see the demo. If you remember, we were running our workflow, creating the VMs, getting the IP addresses. So now that is done, the three IP addresses are here. And we even have the workflow instance ID. You know, if you are familiar with Workflow Foundation, the same workflow GUI, you know, a unique way to access your workflow. And you see that the workflow has actually been suspended, just like we said, suspend workflow. So now the workflow is in the suspended state. So one of the things I can do with OData now is, remember we were sending a mail message, so that email now arrived. You see it's a new email, so we are not faking this. So now the email was saying, you know, a workflow requires your attention, so the admin can perform a specific action here, and we have a link to that. So let me show you one thing before we get there. We can connect to our OData management OData endpoint. So if I type again my credentials. We are connecting to the management server. As you can see here, with 8084 as a port. And this is what you see when you leverage the management OData IIS extension. So here I can get a list of the things I can do. As Dan was saying, you can either get information or update it. So in this case, I can get the workflow, so kind of like get job operation to see the workflows that are running, receive or resume. So if I go to get workflow, now I can see, okay, I have a workflow running. Here is the GUI, the unique ID for that workflow. I can see that the workflow is in a suspended state. I can see the IP address of where it's running. This is the IP address of my management server, et cetera. You get all the information you want about that workflow.
So this is all coming back. I mean, we're querying it over REST. It's coming back over REST APIs. So it's really easy to consume this from anything that can talk web services.
Yeah. So now we can go back to the email that we sent to this admin, copy this link, and, you know, just like you have get workflow here, if I copy this link, now you can see I have resume workflow. So I can even resume the workflow execution using OData. So let's type the credentials again.
It's basically like doing a put operation over a REST API.
Right. So if I type that correctly, now I see, boom, my workflow is running, same GUI as I had before, and that the resume operation has been executed. So let's make sure. Thank you. Let's make sure that's actually true. So if we go to our workflow, we have, you know, get job, invoke command get job. So let's run that. And now we see effectively the workflow is running on that machine again. So I like, you know, end-to-end demos where you can see all of these new features working together, making sense for you as an admin and helping you with your job.
Yeah, this is very, very powerful stuff. I'm sure lots of people will find good uses for this. All right, to our last theme, last but not least, favorite, V3 greater than V2. like I said, lots of new and improved stuff in core PowerShell itself, partial list of features. This is actually kind of a summary. But I really like this quote from Jeffrey Snover. He says, products of true enduring quality are not those that do one thing 1,000% better, but those that do thousands of things 1% better. And that's really what we've tried to do in PowerShell V3, and we'll continue to refine the experience over our releases. If you're familiar with our Connect site, this is where how we accept feedback from the community and from partners. We've addressed over 250 feedback items on Connect, both bugs and feature suggestions. This is just a partial list of some of the top-rated ones. So go to that site, log your bugs and suggestions, vote up ones that you would like to see fixed or addressed, and we look at those, absolutely.
Yeah, just like we triage, you know, internal bugs that our testers file, we look at this at every triage meeting as well. So we really care about your feedback there.
And with that, let's get to some more demos.
Cool. So one of the new things, you know, that we did that makes V3 greater than V2 is module autoloading and command discovery. So you see this awesome, you know, more than 2,300 commandlets in PowerShell. But it will be unfair for us to expect from you, you know, to remember where these commandlets live in the modules, what they are, et cetera, how to load them. So we are making some improvements to continue increasing this or emphasizing this think, type, get philosophy. So let's see how we do that with command discovery. So if you want to find, as you know, all the commands that do something to disks, you get a command, and you get the list there. And if you can see, we didn't run import module here. But still, you see all of the disk commandlets that are available. So you don't need to remember or even figure out what the module is for the disk commandlets. You just type get command, something with disks, and you still get the information for all the commandlets that apply to that. And, you know, you can see it's true. We didn't import that module. It wasn't previously loaded even. And I can even invoke those commands. Not only I can see them, I can invoke them. So the first time, we'll get a little bit of a perf hit because at this point, we do need to import that module, but that just works. You can see here, you know, the friendly name for my disk, how much space I have, the size, etc. Sorry? I can't hear you. Okay. So module autoloading, you know, now that we run that command, the storage module, as you can see here, the last one, is now imported for you. And not only that, I can call any other command from that module, and now that just works. And because I paid the perf kit the first time around, this time it's super fast. It returns immediately.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because in V2, I know a lot of people said, hey, why don't you just load all the modules by default when PowerShell comes up so I don't have to do import module? But if we went down that road in V3 with 85 modules shipping in the box, it would take like 10 or 15 seconds for PowerShell just to launch. And we really care deeply about our startup performance. So we didn't want to load all those modules by default. This makes it really easy to find the commands without having the modules loaded and still just be able to auto-load them on demand.
Yep.
Cool. So let's
show more demos.
Look at another demo. Let me switch over here.
The switch takes a little bit.
Let's see.
Yep. That's my machine.
That's yours. Let's try this again. Ah.
Do you want to run them from here?
Let me see if I can try the switch again.
Yep. You can run them here if you want. Oh, and by the way, one thing, if we didn't mention it earlier, is all of these demos and the deck will also be available in the PowerShell blog if you go there frequently besides the website. So you can just download the demos even if you want. But the demos by themselves won't be on the TechEd website, but you'll be able to get them from the PowerShell blog.
All right, we got it. So let me show you some improvements we made to the file system provider. Now we allow, we have credential support for the file system provider. So you can say new PS drive dash credential. Type in your credentials. Getting closer to parity with net use. It's great. We also have much faster network share performance. So here on my main server, I have a big share. If you look at here, select the last 10. This thing has 10,000 directories in it. In V2, if you look at how V2, we're going to do a measure command on enumerating that list of shares. It's going to go off and enumerate those. This took quite a while. Looks like it took about four and a half seconds on V2. Let's run the same thing on V3. How about 487 milliseconds?
Wow.
10x improvement. And in fact, yeah. And in fact, this performance, this is over a 10 gigabit virtual network. This particular performance improvement gets fast. The discrepancy between V2 and V3 is larger on the slower the network. So when I was testing this in my office back in Redmond against a 1 gigabit connection, this was like 16x faster. You can imagine with like a 100 megabit connection or even over a WAN link, we're seeing a huge performance difference between V2 and V3 for this scenario. All right, let me show you another one. Method signature discovery. This is just kind of cool. So suppose you create a file. We're going to create a new object, system.io.streamwriter, to write to that file. Now suppose we're not really familiar with this class, so we pipe it to get member. We know we want to use the write method, but we look at this. You know, there's a bunch of overloads here. It just kind of scrolls off the screen. Who knows what those are? Now in V3, if you omit the parentheses on the method, we just output all of the signatures for you. Really easy to find that. And let me show you another one here. V3, web commandlets. We have new web commandlets in core PowerShell. You can invoke REST methods using the invoke REST method commandlet here. This requires internet access, so hopefully this is working.
See.
So here I'm just going to do a get, and I'm going to go into the PowerShell blog. I'm going to grab the RSS feed, and I'm going to go and select the title and pub date on it. So I can, there we go. We can see the titles and the pub date. That's just coming back. See how easy it is to invoke REST APIs. And we have a new set of JSON commandlets, convert to JSON, convert from JSON. So it's really easy to take something like an RSS feed and pipe it to convert to JSON and get the JSON from it. And here we've got, this is another demo, get flight status, where we're using a new commandlet called invoke web request, which is just going to do a Bing search. So if you need to do cowboy web scripting and go and grab some arbitrary web page and you want to do some parsing of it, invoke web request works really great for those types of things. So here I can get the flight status. actually, I found out that this demo doesn't work that great in Europe because normally Bing returns the first element of the flight status in the U.S. Doesn't work so great in Europe. So I think do we have another demo for this?
Yeah, Lee sent us a demo. We should try it. Just to replace this one because of the, yeah, that one. I didn't test it though, so I don't know.
So Lee says that this is, we're supposed to just run this and see if this is going to work. A different, hopefully this is an invoke web request demo that will work in,
but is it working?
In Europe for us.
I mean, he's usually good. I don't know what's going on. Doesn't seem to,
did we test this
at all? Yeah, I don't know. We should have tried this. Oh, yeah. It looks like it would work now.
Oh, Rick Rolled by Lee Holmes.
Your favorite song ever, okay. Right?
All right. That was fun.
You have one more, right?
Oh, I got one more.
One more demo. We have 19 demos, so I don't know if you know this. Quite some demos.
So another thing we've done in V2, we've completely rewritten the parser and built upon the dynamic language runtime in .NET. This makes anything that's sort of any script that's sort of algorithmically intensive is just going to run way faster now in V3. We do dynamic compilation of the script at runtime. So here I've got a script called Burn Console, kind of gives a visual indication of a script that's very resource intensive. So I run it in V2. You can see it's doing the burning. V3, it's just smoking. 52 frames a second, 13 frames a second on V2. Gives you an idea of our parser performance on V3. It's just awesome. All right, back to the slides.
One more second. Okay.
All right, so lastly, get involved. Get a T-shirt. Put your favorite commandlet on it. Talk to your coworkers about it. Or if you're getting really serious, go like this guy.
This is serious.
Because T-shirts are so V2.
Let's see how you can top this. You know, I want to see somebody top this tattoo.
So call to action. In summary, Windows PowerShell 3 provides a comprehensive, resilient, and simple way to automate the management of the servers on your network. If you haven't already, go pick up the RC Bits today. You can get it, obviously, in the Windows 8 release preview, but in Windows Server 2012 RC. We also have the Windows Management Framework RC available. Just go to the Download Center, search for WMF3 RC. Don't forget to join in, send us your feedback, and invoke fun. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. And come get your stickers.